Well, we've been doing a lot of Olympics reminiscing this week in 20 years since the Sydney Games, and our Friday legend today, well, she played more than 250 international matches, captained the Hockey Roos for 8 years. She's a member of the Order of Australia and the Sports Australia Hall of Fame, and how's this, is one of only two Aussie women to win Olympic gold medals at three different games. The other is Dawn Fraser. And Rochelle Hawkes is the other one we're speaking to now. Rochelle, how are you today?
Very well, thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
No, great to talk to you. And read this week, Rochelle, that you, along with Susie O'Neill and Kathy Freeman, were considered for lighting the cauldron at Sydney 2000. That's how high you were considered in the Australian sporting echelon. So when did you become aware of that fact?
Well, I really didn't know that. During the course of the Olympic Games, when we were about 3 days into village life, I sort of got the knock on the door to come up and meet John Coates, the chef de mission, and I was a bit nervous about why I was going up there. And he asked me to read the athlete's oath and Andrew Gaze to be the flag bearer. So at that stage, I was pretty nervous in the contemplation about having to deliver the oath on the opening ceremony night. So I knew I was going to deliver the oath during the Olympic Games, but I had only heard that from you just now that I was considered to, one of the candidates to light the cauldron. But I think in the end, Kathy Freeman was just a spot-on choice. And other than a small execution error with the cauldron, it just went off beautifully.
Good morning, Rochelle. Michael Clark here. It's an honour to speak to you. Can you tell me, what's it like as an athlete to go to the Olympics? How much pressure do you feel?
Yeah, the Olympic Games, I think the stats show it's about 1% of the population globally get to attend an Olympic Games. So you're in a pretty rarefied sort of field because there's not too many people that get to do it. And the Olympic Games, I guess, for me, the journey was four Olympic Games, and they were all a little bit different. I went to Seoul in 1988, and that was my first Games at 21, and I was particularly nervous. I remember walking into the village, a little kid in a lolly shop, and there was Steffi Graf riding a bike around the Seoul Olympic Village, and there were so many great athletes that I'd watched over the years and were just in awe of. And so I was particularly nervous at that Games, and then Barcelona was the next one in 92, and you've sort of been there before, but still nervous anticipation about what might follow. And then, you know, obviously rubbing shoulders with some of the greatest athletes of all time. And then Atlanta was just, again, another, that was in America, and there were just so many wonderful athletes. And Muhammad Ali, you go to the food court and you just bump into him there. It was just incredible. And I still remember the story of, you know, this was before smartphones, and we went to the get some breakfast, and there was Muhammad Ali. But beforehand, the girl said, "Oh, we should take a camera because you just never know, you know, who's going to be there." I said, "No, no one will be there." Then. And sure enough, we walk into the food court, and there's Muhammad Ali. Oh, so it was just incredible. And then obviously Sydney, the final game for me, the way I finished it off was just amazing. And Sydney was just special for me, and nervous. We were, Michael, because we were sort of put up with Kathy Freeman and Ian Thorpe's unbackable odds to win gold. So that was a different sort of pressure. And I felt more pressure probably in that Olympic Games than any other that had gone before.
Is there, you just mentioned a few unbelievable athletes. Is there someone that you looked up to as a child and you were lucky enough to then bump into in the breakfast room or during one of those four Olympics you were at?
Well, I can certainly say that Steffi Graf was one that I looked up to because I watched Wimbledon all the time, and I thought she was just incredible. So she was one that I did bump into and thought was amazing. And in fact, our coach, Rick Charlesworth, as a young girl, I actually would go to the hockey stadium and watch him play, and I was in awe of him. He was an incredible hockey player and then went on to do other amazing things, a politician and a doctor as well, so he was a bit of an overachiever. So he was one that I really thought was an incredible athlete and overachiever. And then, of course, at watching American basketball, I was in awe of Michael Jordan as well and just the things that he did on the basketball court. Mm. So they were probably one I bumped into, one coached me, and then one I sort of watched from a distance and was in awe of his ability.
Rochelle, have you reflected over the last couple of days about Sydney and how special that game was, and for us, how quickly it sort of all happened, because it just seems like yesterday the games were held here, and all of a sudden we realise it was 20 years ago.
I know, I can't believe it. You sort of, life gets in the way and you get busy with other things, and then all of a sudden, and what I guess was really disappointing was, because we can't travel, we were going to have a really big ceremony in Sydney and relight the cauldron. There was going to be athletes from around Australia attending, and that was a little bit saddening to me, because I would have loved to have been there and reminisced and then mingled with all the other athletes, and some you still stay in touch with, and it's a really good camaraderie with Olympians. You stay in touch and you sort of reminisce about the old days, and that was really saddening to me. But then, you know, there's been a bit of media hype around it, and that's enabled me to reflect and really, I guess, just the moment in time when we actually won that gold medal on that balmy night on the 29th of September. I remember it was about 28 degrees. It couldn't have been more perfect conditions. And I did reflect on that and remember the siren going and the team being elated, and then doing our lap of honour, and the Argentinian team who we played in the final did a guard of honour, and we walked through that, and with just such tremendous sportsmanship. And there were about 15,000 in the stadium, mainly Aussies with the green and gold, and a lot of athletes had finished their competition and came and watched. So it was just an incredible atmosphere, and I can still see it and smell it and taste it. It was amazing and a great way to cap off an Olympic career with third gold medal.
Yeah, Rochelle, growing up as a little girl, was that your dream? Was hockey your very clear vision, and was part of that trying to get to those Olympic Games?
It was. I had a vision, I remember, very young of wanting to be an Olympian, and it didn't really matter what sport it was, but because of my parents' influence, my mum was heavily involved in the hockey scene, that was sort of the sport I gravitated towards, because I played tennis, and as you do, I grew up in regional Western Australia, so born in Albany, then we moved to Ongerup, then Wandowin, and then Northern, so there were quite a few country towns in there, and you play a lot of sport in those towns, so it wasn't just hockey, it was basketball, tennis, softball, squash, netball. I tried everything, and it was just hockey that I gravitated towards, I guess because of family influence. And in the end, we moved to Perth when I was 15 and started to really focus in on hockey, and that's the pathway I took. But having been in the country and played a lot of sport, I think that really set a foundation for helping me in hockey, because, you know, you learn different skills, and it wasn't just with the stick and the ball, it was basketball, you know, bouncing the ball, hand-eye, and that really did help me in the end, I think.
Well, you'd won a gold medal at Seoul in 88, then Atlanta 96. So coming into the Sydney 2000 Olympics, how much pressure was on you and the girls leading into that event? Because, you know, everyone was, you know, on high alert, knowing that the Hockey Roos were a very, very good team, and you know, we're a chance of winning gold here. How did you girls approach that, and was there any extra pressure on you?
There certainly was extra pressure, and I remember being in the Olympic Village and early on just reading a couple of the newspapers, as you do, and it said Cathy Freeman, she's going to win gold, Ian Thorpe and the Hockey Roos, they're unbackable odds, and I decided from that point on I won't look at another newspaper during the course of the Olympic Games. And I know leading up to Sydney, we played in a tournament in Holland, Champions Trophy tournament, and we didn't play particularly well. That was about 5 months out prior to the game starting. And that was sort of a bit of a wake-up call, and there was a lot of sort of soul-searching, and we used our psychologist to great effect to just really iron out some of the issues. And that was, you know, that you've done it before and it's just going to happen and you're going to get there again, and that complacency might set in. So there was a lot of hard discussion at that time and that really reset the benchmark for us. And then we trained for the next 5 months in earnest, really hard training sessions, and then tapered just before the games. And so there was a lot of discussion around it, and you know, having that winning attitude and not being complacent. So that was a real focus for that for us. And I know getting to the games and being in the village, there was a lot of pressure because there was an expectation that we would win again. So again, you just had to focus on what you were there to do and playing your role in the team and playing consistently well, and then the result would take care of itself. So that's really what we focused in on. And there were some games where we didn't play so well, but we knew that we backed our system in, our game plan, and if everyone contributed, then the result would take care of itself.
Rochelle, I like to ask all our Friday legends, what are some of the difficult times that made you the athlete you were throughout your career, whether it be through that Olympic journey or as a young girl, you know, getting involved in hockey? Because I feel like there's a perception with a lot of our great athletes that it's all rainbows and butterflies.
Oh, most certainly isn't, and I can give a couple of examples. I had an injury called compartment syndrome, which affected my lower legs, and I had to have two operations to fix that problem, one in the anterior compartments at the front and one in the perineals on the side. So it took me about 4 years of working out what the issues were and a couple of operations later to actually be able to force my way into sort of the being an integral part of the team. So that was quite the journey. And the other thing, Michael, was very much we would go and play in stadiums where there was hardly anyone there and the motivation would wane. And I remember a particular occasion when we went to New Zealand and played in windy Wellington. And at the time, Sharon Buchanan was our captain and she was actually dating Peter Sterling. And we're in the stadium there and I think Peter was the only one in the crowd on this particular occasion when we were playing this match. So, you know, the motivation certainly wanes and it's up and down. And obviously those little moments of the end goal where the Olympic Games is the pinnacle of our sport and then we have a Champions Trophy, we have a World Cup, that keeps you going because that's what you're focusing in on. And then those tournaments in between, you've obviously got to play well, but you've got to, you know, sustain your focus that, yeah, the end game is we want to win a gold at Olympic Games. We want to win a gold at a World Cup. And that's what keeps you going.
Yeah, you had a great period. Obviously, I mentioned before, you won Seoul 88, Atlanta 96, Sydney 2000. But in Barcelona, what happened there? Because Australia finished fifth.
Yeah, for sure. That's a really good question. So what we had, 88, we had a different coach and he had a different type of coaching style. I guess you could say it was more sort of a managerial style and we weren't all in the trenches with him, I guess, and we had up and down results. And then Rick Chalmers took over in 1993 and really changed, I guess, the way he structured the team and went far and wide and searched for talent around Australia and brought in younger players that really pushed the older brigade. And one of those players was Nova Peris, who went on to run for Australia as well and found her in Darwin. And she could run like the wind, so he thought that she would, and Wayne was playing club hockey and thought that she could really develop into a good player. So we increased the talent pool and brought in a really good support staff for him that enabled him to, you know, really ask them for information in areas that he probably wasn't as equipped in because he was a forward, so he'd bring a defensive coach in and the like. And then we had we sort of revolutionised the game, I guess, in terms of rotating through our whole squad. And we would have a bit of innovation in that with those wetsuit vests, the cooling vest that you saw Australia was one of the first teams to use them. So we had a lot of different things, elements that really helped sustain our performance. And then we trained really hard, and there's no substitute for hard work. And the team was in a full-time program at various stages over that 8 years, and that really held us in good stead. So that consistent performance came from all of those different avenues, and we were able to sustain a really good level performance over those 8 years.
Yeah, certainly were. I think you only lost one international tournament in the period under your captaincy, Rochelle. Rochelle Hawkes, we're speaking to our Friday legend today, triple Olympic gold medalist. Rochelle, just that special honour you were given at Sydney 2000, 20 years ago, when you read the oath at the opening ceremony on behalf of the athletes. Tell us the process of finding out you were reading it and just actually doing it.
Yes, so John Coates asked me if I would do it, and I said, of course I will, and then said Andrew Gaze will be the flag bearer. And what was really interesting, guys, is most people think girls can't keep a secret, and they said, John said, whatever you do, don't tell anyone other than your parents who were invited to the opening ceremony, because it needs to be kept a secret for 24 hours. So I did that, and then I was to find out that Andrew went straight back to his basketball team, told them all, was a blubbering mess, crying, and they were so elated for him. And then the next day it was announced at a flag-raising ceremony in front of all the media, and the nerves started to kick in then, because the media, one of the journalists came up and said, well, did you know in 84 Edwin Moses got halfway through the line, his lines, and forgot them? Could that happen to you? And do you know there's going to be over a billion people watching? And it was just so nerve-wracking. And then the worst thing that could happen was Rick Charles, with the perfectionist, came up to me, and he was the flag bearer in 1988, and he said, I'm so proud of you reading the oath. It's such a great honour. He said, but I'm going to come to the your accommodation in 2 days, and you have to recite the oath to me. So not only did you have to perform on the hockey field, but you had to perform reading the oath. And sure enough, knock, knock on the door, arrived, and I had to deliver the oath. And I was hopeless in front of him, but I said, look, I think I can do it on the night in front of a billion or so people. So leave me alone and let me deliver it. And actually, in the lead up to reading the oath, we had to sit in the basketball stadium. We were the last team to walk out, being the host country, and Andrew was there, and everyone was just giving him high fives. They were so excited, being the flag bearer and the captain of the team. And it was contrasting picture, where I was sitting in the corner with the massage therapist giving me a shoulder massage, reading through the lines, just hoping that I wouldn't stuff it up, and got to deliver the oath, and just an incredible experience in front of 110,000 screaming Aussies, and one of the best games ever, and still attest to that, even though I've gone and commentated a few since. It was just amazing.
Yeah. How do you feel though, Rochelle? You know, you've had an amazing career, but you're only one of four Australians to have won three gold medals in the same event across three separate Olympics.
Yeah, it's incredible. And I, you know, they often say Dawn Fraser also won three gold medals at three separate Olympic Games. And I'm in awe of her. She was an athlete that I watched over the course of the journey, and was just incredible, and a bit of a rat bag as well, which I kind of liked. I like that sort of bit of mongrel in athletes, and she just set the tone, I think, for us and the way she went about her business. And she's just an icon of the sport, and I look up to her. And Susie O'Neill's another great champion as well, you mentioned, who might have been in contention to light the cauldron, and she's, I would consider a friend of mine, and I thought I was in awe of her and her performances, and I've tried to do butterfly and I'm absolutely hopeless at it. So I was pretty impressed with Susie and the way she went about her business, and Madam Butterfly, and yeah, there's just so many great athletes in Australia, and I think Dawn is the benchmark, I think, in terms of Olympic sport and what she achieved.
Now, Rochelle, I heard you're a huge U2 fan. So what's your go-to karaoke song, which I'm sure got belted out after some of those gold medals?
Oh, With or Without You, definitely. I've belted that out on a few occasions and absolutely love it. The Joshua Tree, one of my favourite albums of all time. And, yeah, think I can sing, but get told otherwise, but any time there's a microphone, I'll be grabbing it and elbowing everyone else out the way.
Just like you, Loz.
Yeah.
What are you up to now, Rochelle?
Yeah, well, I work full time in the civil infrastructure industry, actually, and being in West Australia, it's actually a pretty busy time because it's deemed an essential service. So things haven't really stopped here, and we subcontract out work in various areas of civil infrastructure. So, yeah, we're busy, but I feel for the rest of Australia and Victoria in particular, because trying times, but we'll all pull through in the end, and just makes us even stronger, I think.
Yeah, I think you're right there, Rochelle. Are you still following hockey, and do you follow the Hockeyroos closely? They haven't won a gold medal in a while, and Are they getting closer?
Oh, look, I watch in despair, and I would really love them to be right up there. And I've been to the last four Olympic Games commentating, and it's just been so demoralising to not see them get on the podium and win a medal. And I think there's always a transition period, and there's been some great teams, as Michael would attest to, in the cricket, and you, Laurie, in the rugby, where, you know, New South Wales were dominant for many years, and then you have this cycle where you're not. And I think that's the case with the Hockey Roos. The men seem to, they always are continually challenging for the top spots. But the women, I think the dearth of talent there, and a lot of sports such as rugby has really evolved in the women's scene, and AFL, and so a lot of those great talented players move across to other sports. There's a bit of a drain in the talent pool, and that's one reason. But I think we are getting closer, and there's some consistency there. And I was really looking forward to Tokyo, which has obviously been pushed back 12 months. Look, I think we'll be thereabouts. And if we could podium finish, it would just be so exciting, and then probably encourage the next generation of young Hockey Roos to come through the system, which would really be put the sport in good stead. So I'm hoping, I'm trying to help out in little ways and just mentoring some of the players here and there on an ad hoc basis. And, yeah, I'm right behind them, and I want them to do really well.
Well, Rochelle, congratulations again. An outstanding life as an Olympian. It's been great to take a trip down Olympics memory lane with you this morning. Thank you so much for being our Friday legend.
Thank you very much, guys. Really appreciate it.